And you're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City. And as we said, we're going to be heading over to the City Hall, the City Council Chambers of City Hall here in downtown Nevada City, where there is going to be a panel sponsored by the Healthcare for All group, the single-payer healthcare initiatives going on here in California and across the country. And I'll be talking about some local physicians and city officials, all going to be there, and folks from healthcare organizations as well. In fact, why don't we, I think we will just head over there right now and see if they're ready to take this, to start this town hall meeting on single-payer healthcare here in Nevada City. And then we'll head over now to Nevada City's City Hall.
My name is Beth Moore. I'll be your MC this evening. And I'd like to introduce our speakers once as our panel, and then each speaker will also briefly talk about their background and what they're bringing to this discussion. So with us tonight, we have Dr. Larry Danto, we have Dr. Suki Newsom, Dr. Roger Hicks. We have Sue Cannon, RN, with CNA, the Complain Nurse Association. We have Tiffany Pelkey with CSEA, and Burnett Senna, Vice Mayor for the City. So thank you very much, panelists. Just before our panelists begin, they will be addressing us for a little bit of time each, and then we'll have a little wrap-up toward the end of the hour, at which time we will open it up to audience questions, comments, discussion, and get into a little community discussion bunch. So we'll wrap up our entire evening by 10 o'clock, and we'll give you some future steps and next action at that time if you're interested. So thank you very much. We'll begin our evening's presentations with Larry Danto.
Thank you, Beth. Let me introduce myself this way. I'm a board-certified general and endocrine surgeon, educated at the University of Michigan and trained in university, private, and county hospitals. I've practiced in the Navy, at sea, on land, and in harm's way. I've practiced and taught on the UC Davis faculty, VA, and the county hospitals. I've practiced in private relief group of surgeons, and as a solo rural surgeon. You may think I can't hold a job, but sadly, the average lifespan of a physician in a given practice is now dwindling to under 5 years. Not what I expected. Yet this background gives me a panoramic view of our healthcare system. I matured in the Sacramento Valley during the rampant growth of for-profit managed care. Our area was the cauldron for capitation. Ultimately, 80 to 90% of the Valley's patients and physicians were controlled by HMOs. For many years, I've been studying and writing about healthcare delivery and the need for better access to essential care. Many, myself included, talk about America being in a healthcare crisis. I'm not sure this is really the case, as most of us have financial access to care. It is difficult to conceive that a generally healthy nation can be in crisis. But our social unrest and economic worries for failure to provide adequate access to care certainly indicate the need for change. What I've learned about our health system is this. I've learned that if we have the right to life and the pursuit of happiness, we must have the right to pursue health. Further, we have the responsibility to pursue it. For without health, we cannot realize our potential. It is counterintuitive and counterproductive for a free nation not to be concerned about the health of everyone. I've learned that having choices is inherent to American freedom, and that we fear what is vaguely called socialized medicine because we fear losing our ability to choose. Yet, is not choice what managed care has robbed us of. I've learned capitation, limiting or capping the amount and type of care allowable over a given period of time, has been the HMO's key to profit. Capitation is not socially responsible or a sound way to control the cost of care, and it has certainly failed to control its price. It is less than honest to allow capitation to be used to ensure corporate profit. And I've learned assuring our health is not the bottom line for the insurance industry. I've learned, contrary to what occurs in the free market, that competition in a privately managed health market actually increases the cost and price of care due to unnecessary reduplication of hard assets, personnel, and services. I've learned we are the only industrialized nation without government-sponsored universal care, and that our economy and ability to compete increasingly show the ill effects of an archaic employment-based health policy. We spend twice as much.
And we are working on increasing the sound volume here of the speakers at this town hall meeting on single-payer health care.
Embarrassingly worse than any industrialized nation. We rank a shocking 15th in mortality from correctable health conditions. Our health status and mortality rates by themselves are not affordable, and this is reflected in decreased productivity and a weak economy. I've learned our exorbitant cost of care contributes to local, state, and national budget crises. I've learned our quality of care is superb, unsurpassed, and enviable. It's our method of delivery and distribution that is substandard and significantly ineffective. And this contributes to our being less competitive in global markets. The American population is aging, and as most health costs are incurred in the last two decades of life, we are increasingly expensive to treat. Everyone with health insurance pays, in one way or another, for everyone without coverage. We are, in truth and unavoidably, our brother's keepers. And I've learned it is good economy to keep our brothers healthy. I've learned the expense of employment-based health insurance hurts every American business and is largely responsible for our failing to compete against countries with government-sponsored systems of universal care. With the rise of employment-based managed care, the focus of health care delivery has shifted from the patient to corporate solvency, and millions feel chained to their jobs because coverage isn't portable. I've learned solo medical practices all but vanished as physicians seek the economy and scale of easier lifestyle offered by industry-oriented groups, and that traditional physician-patient relationships are dwindling. Further, standards of professionalism have faded in the dazzling light of technology and healthcare enterprise. I've learned the AMA and most state medical societies wish to reform what we have, but incremental reform is costly, dangerously slow, and ever susceptible to manipulation by the self-serving interests of politics. Most specialty societies, like the American College of Physicians and the American College of Surgeons, favor change to a government-sponsored system of universal care. And I've learned the Massachusetts Health Plan is succeeding. All health systems are flawed, like the people who work in them and the patients they serve. And I've learned our obsession with perfection often prevents us from simply making things better. Universal care does not mean socialized medicine or even single payer. And we can envision a health system that is not only better for American patients, but better for American industry as well. Personally, I'm happy to finally have Medicare, along with the quality of care, freedom of choice, and economy it provides. It would be a blessing if everyone could have something like Medicare to cover essential health services. I've learned that despite our concerns about the cost of government involvement in our lives, when Medicare administrates itself, the costs are under 5%. However, when the private insurance industry administrates Medicare, the cost is several times higher. I agree with Michelle Obama that the limit to our children's achievements should be the reach of their dreams and their willingness to work. But I know poor health destroys the will to work. Finally, I've learned that if we cannot determine to do what is right for ourselves, we cannot be of help to others. For the sake of our future and our much-needed leadership in a global culture, we simply must do better. As Forrest Gump might have said at this point, that's pretty much all I've learned about that.
Thanks for listening.
And our next speaker is Dr. Christine Newsom.
Thanks. I'm an internist practicing primary care in Grass Valley. My husband is an oncologist. He's medical director at the cancer center at the hospital in Grass Valley. And I'd like to share some thoughts and observations that we both have had, although I do want to clarify that I am speaking as an individual, and neither of us have come forward with these thoughts as representative of any group, just our own observations. Every day we see patients, even those with insurance, who don't take the meds they need, get the tests that they should, or see the specialists that they should because they can't afford them. We see patients whose health insurance premiums have risen in 1 month from barely affordable to more than their mortgage or rent, with a huge deductible at that. We see patients who stay in a job they hate, stay in abusive relationships, or move to a place where they're unhappy just to keep health insurance. There have been a number of solutions offered in the last decades for the difficulties that have now amounted to a crisis in health care. There was an exchange of letters in the Grass Valley letters to the editor in the Grass Valley Union last year suggesting that the crisis could be solved by doctors and hospitals offering charity care. This approach is completely out of touch with reality. In the last 2.5 years in Nevada County, we have had 12 primary care doctors close their practices. And in large part, that was due to the inability of the primary care doctors to support their families. Hospitals throughout the country are closing due to the costs of caring for the uninsured. Charity might have worked a couple of generations ago, but it's not going to do it now. In the 1980s and 90s, we thought that managed care and the HMOs would solve many of our problems, but as Dr. Danto has pointed out, that unfortunately has been a huge disappointment. The HMO experience has cut neither total medical expenses nor the number of uninsured. The major impact of HMOs has been increased profits for investors, while at the same time making it more difficult for patients and their doctors to access health care. I have here a recent copy of the American Medical Association News. And as stated in a recent article here, the president and CEO of WellPoint Health Insurance, Angela Braley, was quoted as saying, well, the headline here says, health plans say they'll risk losing members to protect profit margins. And the CEO is quoted as saying, we will not sacrifice profitability for membership. Now, WellPoint isn't an HMO, but nevertheless, the point is made, I think. I'd like to share with you some of the CEO salaries from the fiscal year 2004-2005, which is the latest year for which we have public figures. This is taken from the Knox-Keene Health Plan summary. These are numbers that the health insurance companies are required by law to report to the state of California yearly. And I'll just give you some examples. The president and CEO of Aetna in that fiscal year, John Rowe, had an annual salary of $1,133,000 plus, quotes, other annual compensation of $2,731,000 for a total annual compensation of $3,865,000. I'll jump to Health Net. Jay Gellert, the president and CEO, had a salary of $934,000, other compensation $79,000, so his total was $1,014,000 with stock options. And here's WellPoint Blue Cross president, CEO Larry Glasuck, $1 million salary, $4 million other, for a total of $5,446,000. And that was 4 years ago. So that is not where our answers are going to come. What about keeping our present system of private health insurance but making it mandatory for people to buy it like Massachusetts did last year? Dr. Danto made reference to this, but actually Massachusetts is having a lot of trouble. Systems like that are not new. Actually, since Massachusetts under Dukakis in 1988 tried to initiate a system like that but failed. And since then, there's been attempts by Oregon, Minnesota, Tennessee, Vermont, Washington, and Maine to institute some form of mandatory health insurance. But what's happening in Massachusetts right now is what happened in all of those states, and that is they're running out of the funds that subsidize coverage for the poor. Those funds are now disappearing, and the unsubsidized coverage for the middle-income people are either unaffordable or they're so skimpy that they just don't help. For example, $2,000 deduction, and then above that, the person has to pay for 20% of everything. Well, if you have a $100,000 hospital bill, you're still going to have to pay $20,000. The only winner in this system is the insurance industry. So what's been emerging among a growing number of health policy experts and patients and many other people, including doctors, is the realization that what has worked so well in many other countries, such as France, England, and Canada, who have better measurements of health and life expectancy, as was mentioned, their model is something we should look at. And this has often gone by the name of single-payer system, or you could think of it as Medicare for everyone. Now, as a physician who makes part of my living from taking care of Medicare patients, I can tell you it's not perfect, but it's dependable, I get paid on time, and nobody gets left out, age 65 and older. The best part of it all is that Medicare administrative costs, as mentioned before, they run about 3%. That's as compared to 20 to 30% that the private insurance companies spend on administration, marketing, lobbying, and eye-popping executive salaries. I think single-payer insurance for basic health care is an approach that both progressives and conservatives can get behind. The overall savings in medical expenditures would be huge. And for those worried about government involvement, consider this. We can all agree that we're best served by public, not profit-driven police force and fire department, right? Why would this not apply to health protection? We're already doing it for those age 65 and older. Why wouldn't we want to do this for those under? I believe that as long as the profit motive remains central to the insurance of basic health care, we won't have true reform. Continuing with our current system of private health insurance with the emphasis on insuring the well, excluding the sick, encouraging the least care possible, maximizing stockholders' profits and rewarding CEOs is not only inappropriate, we should ask ourselves why, as leaders of the free world, we have tolerated this for so long.
Reminder to our listening audience that this is our single-payer healthcare and healthcare crisis forum here at Nevada City City Hall. And we have our panel of speakers, and next we will hear from Dr. Roger Hicks.
Thanks, Beth, and thanks for organizing this. Thanks to KVMR and NCTV for broadcasting this. It's a discussion that is really long overdue, and I'm so glad that we're having it here. I'm a board certified in emergency medicine. I'm board certified in emergency medicine, and I'm a co-owner of UbiDocs Urgent Care with Linda Rackmill and of Harmony Health Medical Clinic in Marysville with Rachel Farrell. UBIDOX is an urgent care clinic, meaning we specialize in minor injuries and acute illnesses, and we take patients with most private insurances, not HMOs, Medicare, but not Medi-Cal. About a third of our patients are uninsured. At Harmony Health, we serve the underserved. Harmony Health is a rural health clinic, and over 80% of our patients there are on Medi-Cal. I wanted to be on this panel because I have seen in my 30 years of practice, I have come to learn that our healthcare system is not working. As has been mentioned, we spend about twice as much per capita on healthcare as any other industrialized nation, yet our outcomes are miserable. I have some updated figures, Larry, from the CIA Factbook, that's Central Intelligence Agency, of 2007. We're now 42nd in life expectancy. We come in just behind Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Jordan. And we're about the same in infant mortality. Why? Well, there's several reasons for our low life expectancy and high infant mortality. But one of them is this patchwork system that we have of paying for healthcare. Most all insurance companies are for profit, which means that their goal is to make a profit for the shareholders. It's not to ensure healthcare for Americans. Nearly 50 million Americans are uninsured. That means about 1 in 6. And as I said, at our clinic, it's about 1 in 3. And millions more are underinsured, meaning that they can't, you know, they have high deductibles or they have Medi-Cal, which the reimbursement rates on Medi-Cal are so low that most doctors can't afford to accept it. The reason we can take Medi-Cal at Harmony Health is because we have this special designation from the federal government, part of this complex, really arcane healthcare delivery system, and that's a rural health clinic. There's another one called a federally qualified healthcare facility. We have one here locally, and that's Miners Clinic. If we were to see a Medi-Cal patient at UBIDOX, we would be paid about $20 for an average visit. Whereas the reimbursement at a federally qualified health care facility or a rural health clinic is somewhere around $100. So, you know, we can't, at UBIDOX, we can't cover our overhead. And at an FQHC or a rural health clinic, actually the reimbursement is better than it is for seeing a person with private insurance, which is why several local doctors have closed their primary care practices and gone to work at Miners Clinic because the reimbursement is higher there per patient. Like Christine, every day at our clinics, we see people who don't get the tests that they need or the treatment that they need because they can't afford it. Every month, I see somebody who has been financially ruined by an accident or an illness. Many of our patients, and I'm sure this is true throughout the country, can't afford their medicines, so they rely on samples that we give them when we have them, or they get their drugs from Canada online, or they just don't take them at all. The system that we have now doesn't work for the uninsured or those on Medi-Cal. At Harmony Health, even people with insurance, these are people that I refer to as the underinsured, we can't get them in to see specialists. If you have a bad knee or some intestinal problem, you need to see an orthopedist or a gastroenterologist, and you have Medi-Cal in Yuba County, I mean, sorry, it's not going to happen. The system that we have now is incredibly wasteful and inefficient. The figures that I've read say that about 33 cents out of every dollar is spent on administration rather than on actual patient care. That includes, you know, the underwriting for insurance companies, their marketing, their overhead, their claims adjusters, billing, sales, and those exorbitant CEO salaries that Christine mentioned. The 33 cents out of each dollar does not even include the three people that I have full time just to send out our medical bills at UBIDOX. It doesn't include the overhead for sending out these complex bills on the doctor's side. you practically have to have a college degree to prepare and send out a medical bill these days, and you do need special certification. And I don't know if anybody of you, I mean, it's my feeling that when I open one of those EOBs, those explanation of benefits that I get from my insurance company when I'm a patient, I need that special certification just to understand it. So the insurance companies, their reason for being is to make a profit, and that has been taken to such an extreme that they, for a while they were having these computer programs that would arbitrarily kick out or deny every one in every 17 claims from doctors. And just, you know, for no reason, on the hope that the doctor's offices wouldn't protest it, because, you know, then that's why I have to have three billing people, because then they review these rejected claims and say there's no reason for rejecting, and we send it back, and there's this whole thing over the mail. Well, actually, this was discovered that these computer programs were doing this by, you know, a former employee of an insurance company. And a lawsuit happened under the RICO law, the racketeering law, and seven of the major insurance companies in America were named, and the doctors were successful in suing over this racketeering business. Our system is incredibly inefficient because the uninsured and underinsured often end up in the emergency room for their problems, and that is the most expensive place to be treated. It's open 24 hours a day. It's geared up for the most critically ill and injured patients, and so the overhead is extremely high. But people who are underinsured or uninsured go there because that's their only option, especially if they need specialty care. Most people don't get the preventive care that they need because they delay treatment of a known problem, or they, you know, and it's because of money. And when they are seen, it's often with the problem is more advanced and therefore more expensive to treat, and ends up with more disability, time off work, lost wages, and cost to society. Our present system is incredibly complicated. As I mentioned, just sending out the bills and reading the bills is amazingly complicated. But also, as a patient, figuring out who is responsible for your bill is complicated. Is your back pain work-related? Or is it left over from that car accident you had a few years ago, in which case your car insurance should pay for it? Is it something that happened to you when you were in the service, so maybe the VA should pay for it? Or is it from lifting that rock the wrong way last week, in which case your private health insurance should pay for it? Or, you know, from some disease that you've developed, or some combination of the above? I see patients that are caught in the crossfire of various entities trying to, you know, argue with each other about who's going to pick up the bill, and it often results in delays in treatment, especially with workers' comp. I have patients where their treatment has been delayed for 2 years, they lose their house, they go bankrupt, their marriage breaks up, and that's because the workers' comp insurance companies are trying to not pay the bill, basically, and deny responsibility for it. And then there's the famous workers' comp thing. You know, somebody hurts their shoulder, and so that's the accepted body part. But then it turns out that actually their shoulder pain is coming from a problem in their neck, but then the workers' comp company denies that because the neck injury is not an accepted body part. Our present system is driving medical school graduates into specialties and away from primary care. For the past several years, more than half of the family practice residency positions in this country have been filled by foreigners, and about a quarter of them, or somewhere between 20 and 25% of them, are not filled. Why? Because it's so difficult to make a living in primary care. And as you all know, as Christine mentioned, there's been about a dozen primary care physicians in this community that have shut their doors. We're not training enough primary care doctors now, and that's something that our society really won't feel for another, you know, 5 or 10 years. It's a long time to train them, and it's not something that we can fix tomorrow. The fix to the problem is 10 years in the making also. Opposition to single-payer system in the past has come from doctors, insurance companies, and the general public with the fears of a socialized medicine, and I'll just leave that one alone. But I do want to say that people criticize the Canadian system which is a single-payer universal healthcare system, saying that you have to wait for an MRI or, you know, for your knee replacement. Well, that's called triaging, which means sorting out medical problems. No society that I know of has an unlimited amount of money for healthcare, so some sort of prioritization is necessary everywhere. It's done in different ways. In other societies, it's whose need is the most urgent, what use of healthcare money would give the greatest good to the largest number of people, who's the most likely to recover, or various other means. But in our society, we triage by the ability to pay, the so-called wallet biopsy. It's my belief that there are more rational and humane ways of deciding how to spend our healthcare dollars.
Thank you very much, Roger. Next in our forum, we will hear from Sue Cannon, RN, who is with the California Nurses Association.
Thanks. Yes, I am a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for about 11 years and working all in California. I've been associated with the California Nurses Association and a member of the California Nurses Association for about 5 years. It's a delight to be here with you. It's wonderful to see so many community members here and interested and ready to learn and hopefully to take some action about this issue. It's something that is important to me. As Americans, we've already talked about, the facts are we are forced to pay more money for our health care than anybody else in the world, and we get a whole lot less than anybody in any of the other industrialized nations. So the bottom line is we're getting gypped, and it's, in my book, the insurance companies that are to blame. There are millions of us that go without primary care, millions of us that go without taking medicines. And because of that, they're forced to suffer and to not be able to live a normal, productive life. Thousands, as has been mentioned also, flock to the emergency departments to get care for problems that they just can't any longer self-treat. And the problem is an emergency department, when they go to, you know, President Bush said, oh, everybody has care, just go to the ER. Well, the thing is, when you go to the ER, what they are required to do is to stabilize you. So basically, you go to the ER and you get immediate treatment for your problem, but most likely your problem requires further care, requires medicines. And what we do in the ER is we say, okay, here are the prescriptions, and here's some teaching information, and please go see your doctor tomorrow, which... they came to the ER because they don't have a doctor, they don't have means to get the medicines, etc. So that is definitely not a fix. It's just a bigger part of our problem. And then you that are coming in with a heart attack and a head bleed and a trauma where, you know, you need immediate care, the true people that should be coming into the emergency room, you then are getting your care a little bit delayed because there are all these other people that are also needing primary care. Just the other day, I'm a nurse in the neurointensive care unit over at UC San Francisco. And just the other day, I had a patient that had a ruptured aneurysm in his head. Now, lots of times, if you have high blood pressure and you have things in your blood vessels that are set up that way, you are prone then to have this problem of a rupture. So taking your blood pressure medicine and keeping your blood pressure low is how you keep yourself safe from a ruptured aneurysm in your head. Well, my patient had been to the doctor. He'd gotten his prescription, so he'd done everything that he could. But his insurance company said that medicine is not a medicine we pay for. So he was then waiting for his doctor and the insurance company to work out what medicine could he have for blood pressure so that he could then take it, get his blood pressure lowered. Well, while he's waiting for a medicine to get figured out, his blood pressure does go too high, a blood vessel in his head bursts, he bleeds, and now he has symptoms like a stroke. Right side of his body is not moving. Okay? This guy is a salesman. He works for himself. And so he's probably not going to be able to go back to his job. He's going to require months, if not years, of rehab. Going back to now, he can't go to his job. His job is what gives him his money. His money is what helps him pay his premiums. So without his job, now he can't pay his premiums. And what do you suppose the insurance company does to him? They drop him as fast and as soon as they can. Let's say he has the opportunity to get some COBRA coverage. So COBRA, okay, yeah, maybe it's a nice thing, but the costs are anywhere from $500 to $1,500 a month. I mean, they're just exorbitant costs as well. And again, if you're not working and you don't have your income, there's no way for you to get that. So this incident, for pennies a day, he could have had his blood pressure medicine and not had any of this problem, suffering, pain. He had to have surgery. None of that he would have had he just been able to go get his blood pressure medicine and be taking it. But our insurance companies are like these blocks that interfere with our care. Our doctors here are specialized, trained individuals. They have the skill and the expertise, and they're actually seeing you, right? And then they send off to the insurance companies, this is what I did, and this is what the patient needs. And it could even be just some clerk that maybe has a high school degree or the computer that says, oh, this is the one we reject, that then kicks out, boom, denied. There's no real rhyme or reason to it unless you are on the we're in the business to make money side of things. That's where insurance companies do very well. But as has been already mentioned on the panel, for actually taking care and getting health care to people, no, they have been just a disaster for us. So as a nurse, I'm really frustrated with our system of health care. I'm very frustrated with the part of our system that is all of us most likely here that we work and we either through our work or through individually we buy health insurance from Blue Cross, from Aetna, from Cigna. All of these companies, how they make their profit is they deny you care. For what does the stamp cost now, 42 cents? For 42 cents, they can mail you a letter saying denied. And if you don't fight it, they have just saved themselves hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars. That's their business plan, you know? And it's not right, and it's not moral, and it's not what we should be doing. Now, what should we be doing? Well, as a nurse and as a member of the California Nurses Association, what we think we should be doing is we should be having a single standard of care for everybody that, you know, everybody's in, nobody's out. And there is actually a bill that has passed the legislature. It's sitting on our governor Schwarzenegger's desk right now, SB 840. It is a single-payer bill, and what that means is that it's not socialized medicine, ooh, that we should be afraid of. It's civilized medicine. It's medicine for all. And it is basically we all pay into one pot, and then out of that one pot, when I need to go to the doctor, you need to go to the doctor, you need to go to get to the hospital, you choose your own doctor, you choose your hospital, and you go get the care that you need. The physicians give you the care, and then they get reimbursed for the care that they give you. Do you realize that doesn't happen right now? The physicians can care for people that if they don't have money, and they can maybe never, ever get paid. But under this single-payer system, you will be paid for the care that you give. Same thing with hospitals. Hospitals, you choose the hospital you go to. The hospital gets paid for the care that they give. So this SB 840 bill, single payer, universal health care, we think is the answer to what ails us and our sick system. I would invite you to go to guaranteedhealthcare.org, which is our California Nurses Association site. And I implore you tomorrow, pick up your phone, dial your fax machine, fax the governor, call the governor, and tell him you want him to sign SB 840. Thanks.
Thank you, Sue. Next on our lovely panel, we have Tiffany Pelkey, who is here with our CSEA, California School Employees Association. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm becoming an activist, and I'm slowly taking over the third part of my life. You know, I have two jobs to maintain all this, and this is going to be my third job, and it's slowly taking over. And I come from a grounds department. I come from a school district. I work with a lot of maintenance people. I work with the office staff, the food service people, aides. We, CSEA, take care of everything else but what the teachers do. And we see this problem every single day, and every, just like you guys, we all have an issue with health care one way or another. We are, CSEA is trying to create this SB 840 to help fight for this SB 840 so we can have health care from the cradle to the grave. And It really needs to happen because people are struggling. We pay half of our paychecks just to keep our health insurance. We have aides that work part-time that don't have insurance. I have a 21-year-old son that is now moving out of the house, didn't choose to go to college, chose to go to work. They don't give him health care. He can't have health care. We need to keep our young people healthy to take our places when we move on. And I'm glad to see so many young people here in the room because we need to stand up for our next generations coming up. And it may not happen in my lifetime. I'm hoping it gets signed tonight because I would love it. I would save so much money. Everybody here would save so much money. The small business person would save money. That's where I get most of my grief. When I tour around for my union to do this, I get most of the grief from small business people that don't have to pay insurance for their young employees or their older employees, as some of these big warehouse stores might have. And it's a moral thing. I understand, and I pretty well think that they would want to give them insurance if they could afford it. And with this plan, it would make it a whole lot easier for everybody to be able to afford it, to offer health care, to keep their employees healthy and happy so they can come to work, so we don't have the sick days, the call-ins. They're not showing up because of some of the things that they see in the ER, you know. So it's a big thing for this SB 840 to really get passed, and I'm hoping that people help get the word out. I'm touring around myself, going to schools all over Northern California, and just getting the word out. There's a lot of people that don't even know it's happening, and I'm so shocked about it because, you know, they've talked about federal plans, they've talked about the California plans, and it just really needs to get out. and I'm glad to see this place full. It's awesome. Thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you, Tiffany Pelkey. And our last speaker on our panel before we open it up to our audience here and out there is Renette Senham, and she is our Vice Mayor of Nevada City. Renette.
Thank you, Beth, for organizing this. At first I wasn't sure why we should be speaking here tonight, because I'm not a physician or an RN, but I do represent one sector of our population. As Roger had said, one out of six people don't have insurance, and I'm one of those people right here out of the six of us. I have literally not had insurance for 24 years since I left my parents' home, or medical insurance, and I've been very fortunate with my health, with, I guess, a luck and a prayer. I've made it through and don't know how long that will last. God only knows. We spend over $650 billion on war. I have a moral problem with that. And not having insurance for me is not as much a financial reason as it is moral. I think it's immoral. I am not willing to put a penny of my hard-earned dollars into a CEO's pocket at the expense of everyone else's health. And if that means I have to get sick for it, if that means I have to die for it, I'm willing to. It's really immoral. Currently, with SB 840, 59% of California legislators approve it. With SB 840, 70% of all Californians desire it. 59% of American physicians support this type of reform. Currently, private insurers waste 33% of every health care dollar on administration and corporate profits to a tune of $20 billion. Medicare administrative costs are just 3%. What we're missing right now is political will. And it's not going to come from the top and going to the bottom. It's going to come from the bottom and go to the top. So what do you do about it? Well, currently, there's something called the United States Conference of Mayors. They had a 76th annual meeting on June 20th to the 24th, and they adopted a resolution. And I'd like to read this. And I really do encourage everyone to support this. And if you're not from this area, get your local councils to start supporting this and create that force from the bottom and take it to the top. This resolution in support of the United States National Health Insurance Act, H.R. 676, and this is how it goes. Whereas every person deserves access to affordable, quality health care. And whereas the number of Americans without health insurance now exceeds 47 million. And whereas millions with insurance have coverage so inadequate that a major illness would lead to financial ruin, and medical illness and bills contribute to one half of all American bankruptcies. And whereas proposals for consumer-directed health care would worsen this situation by penalizing the sick, discouraging prevention, and saddling many working families with huge medical bills. And whereas managed care and other market-based reforms have failed to contain health care costs, which now threaten the international competitiveness of U.S. manufacturers. And whereas administrative waste stemming from our reliance on private insurers consumes one-third of private health spending, while the single-payer Medicare system has administrative costs of less than 5%. And whereas U.S. hospitals spend 24.3% of their budgets on billing and administration, while hospitals under Canada's single-payer system spend only 12.9%. And whereas Harvard researchers estimate that more than $300 billion could be recovered by replacing private insurance companies with a single public payer enough to cover the uninsured and to improve coverage for all those who now have one partial coverage. And whereas entrusting care to profit-oriented firms diverts billions of dollars to outrageous incomes for CEOs and threatens the quality care. And whereas the United States National Health Insurance Act, H.R. 676, would assure universal coverage of all medically necessary services, contain costs by slashing bureaucracy, protect the doctor-patient relationship, assure patients a completely free choice of doctors, and allow physicians a free choice of practice settings. And whereas most polls show that the majority of Americans support universal health care. And whereas, as of the date of this resolution, the majority of Americans' physicians, 59%, believe that the single payer is the best method of securing universal health care. And whereas the United States National Health Insurance Act, H.R. 676, will guarantee every mayor that all residents and employees of his, her city will be fully covered for health care and save millions of taxpayer dollars now spent on premiums to provide less than full health coverage for government employees. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the United States Conference of Mayors expresses its support for the United States National Health Care Insurance Act, H.R. 676, and calls upon federal legislators to work towards its immediate enactment and further urges the adoption of a process by which health care will be required to justify any increases to health care costs. And I'm done.
I'd like to give another hand to all of our panelists. Thank you so much. And just a little bit of clarifying before we move on to the next part of our presentation. H.R. 676, which I believe is authored by John Conyers, is the national version of what many people here tonight are talking about, Senate Bill 840, which is authored by Senator Sheila Kuehl out of Santa Monica. It's been in a couple of other iterations in the past, and it's been brought back. Someone also mentioned earlier it passed this last week. It passed both our Assembly and our Senate and moved on. I'm sorry?
State Senate,
and our Assembly here in California, SB 840, and moved on to the governor's desk. And I know that there were a number of people in this room today who attended a rally in Sacramento, including at least one of our panelists, discussing the possibilities for SB 840 and trying to support Arnold Schwarzenegger in his deliberation over whether to sign SB 840 or not. We know that he has vetoed it in the past, the last time that both our state Senate and Assembly passed it. But we hold hope that perhaps he will reconsider this time. So I have a couple of speakers who would like to say a couple of things, and then we'll open it up to the general audience and also see if we can invite calls from our radio audience as well. Cindy Sherbeck, I know, attended the rally today, and I'm wondering if you want to speak about that, a little bit about what happened. Cindy Sherbeck is also the director of our local Healthcare for All organization, which is sponsoring this event tonight. So,
KVMR FM, Nevada City. Single Payer Healthcare
Thanks
Town Hall Meeting.
So much for coming. All right. I take direction well. I was with several others here today at the Capitol for a rally trying to get the governor to pass Bill SB 840. It technically isn't on his desk yet, so please, please call him. Let him know that this is something you want to support. Let me tell you about some of the people, some of the groups that were there in support today. California Association of Retired Americans, California State Employees Association, California Physicians Alliance, Healthcare for All, California School Employees Association, California Nurses Association, California Teachers Association, Single Payer Now. I think I got them all. We delivered 50,000 postcards to the governor today in support of SB 840. If this is a cause that you believe is worth fighting for, please join us. We are Healthcare for All of Nevada County. Students, if you're looking for a project, call me. Mm-hmm. We'll put you to work. I think that's about it. Thank you. And we are Nevada County Healthcare for All. Flyers are on the back table, so please join us. We could use you. Thanks. My contact email is on the flyer in the back, so you can just grab one and send me an email.
You're on the radio, so give it.
Oh, my email?
Oh. The contact info.
It's terrible. It's I don't want my underscore MTV at yahoo.com. Sorry. I'm involved in some other things as well, some other immoral things. 530-227-6149. And call me and we'll put you to work. Thanks.
We had to break Cindy out on furlough to be here tonight. So, yeah, glad it worked out. One other speaker that I'd like to introduce. We had another person who we had contact about participating tonight, and we had some miscommunications. But I'm very pleased that Bill Dubrow is here this evening, and he is a local physician. He's probably the single greatest provider for Medi-Cal patients in the county, and I believe he's got some words to share about that. So please welcome Bill Dubrow. Bill Dubrow.
Thank you, Beth Moore. Is it on? Does it seem to be on? I'm appreciative of this group and the distinguished panel and the contortions to which I have to go. So if you'll excuse me, I'll turn my back on you. But I want to say, Dr. Hicks, that actually it's $21.34, no matter how long I see them or how many problems I deal with. And as you know, no Medi-Cal patient, in my experience, has ever arrived with just one problem. I want to just change the style a little bit. The other day, a patient came in, and he had said he lost 30 pounds. And he'd had some jaundice, but the jaundice was getting a little bit better, so that was hopeful. But he wanted my opinion. He was a little worried, and I was worried too. So he said, oh, incidentally, I don't have any medical insurance, so could you kind of keep the expenses down? So I ordered the cheapest thing possible. I ordered a sonography because it could have been gallbladder disease. But as I dreaded, something suspicious was behind the gallbladder. So then I ordered, incidentally, sonography is about $800 at the hospital just for the sonography. I don't know what the radiologist charge. I have no idea, actually. And so then I had to order a CAT scan of the abdomen with contrast. That cost about $900. And that also requires a reading. And that showed cancer of the pancreas. And before my patient really got out of there, he was required to have three excretions.